Hello there, and welcome to yet another, yes, exciting podcast on British history and global politics and all those things. Although mostly I've been focusing on history, but I do fully plan to do some more politics ones in the near future. However, I'm having a lot of fun with medicine at the moment. The study of the history, not actual medicine at this stage. Anyway, yes, hello everyone. And last time I did one of these, I talked about the Black Death of the 14th century in the Middle Ages. So it only seems fitting that I now do, kind of a comparative case study. So I'm going to look a little bit at the Great Plague in London, which struck in 1665. That's the 17th century. Which you probably knew, but I thought I'd share that anyway. Now, for those of you who do take part in the GCSE medicine course, this is another case study. And this is one for the Renaissance period of medicine. And so you would want to look at this and think about using it as a comparison with the Black Death. Now, the big thing is to make sure you recognise that these are different. And they're completely different events, and not to get the Great Plague confused with the Black Death. But you also want to be using them for comparison. So you want to be picking out bits of similarity and areas of difference, which hopefully this little talk will help you with. So what was the Great Plague? Well, it was the bubonic plague. It was the Black Death all over again. It was exactly the same disease, just a different variant or a different strain. Now, the Black Death had hit England and Europe every sort of 20 to 30 years or so since the Black Death. And people had kind of got used to it, and it was kind of like an ever-present in the background, a bit like flu, I suppose, although much nastier than flu. However, in the year 1665, we get a really big, really serious outbreak that swept across the whole of England, mostly spread through the trading links that had developed and the interconnectedness of cities since the Tudor period. Also worth bearing in mind that although it wasn't urban by modern standards, the 17th century and the Renaissance period saw the growth of cities, particularly London in England, but other cities had developed. So you had a more concentrated population, which plays a role here. So this was, well, it was called the Great Plague because it was probably the most serious outbreak since the Black Death. Not quite as deadly in terms of the proportion of the population. It kind of peaked in September 1665 when you have about 7,000 deaths from the disease each week. So, I mean, that's quite a lot still. And across the outbreak, which lasts really about 9 months or so, and some people reckon it was really the Great Fire of London that really ended it. So, jury's out on that. Yeah, so during the peak throughout this outbreak, 100,000 Londoners died, which was quite a hefty proportion of London population at the time. I'm not 100% sure on what the population was, but I think it was about 300,000, 400,000, maybe 500,000. Numbers are sketchy, and I would need to check that. I think it was about 500,000, so about 500,000. So 1 in 5 people died in London. So that was pretty bad. On the plus side, this was the last time there was a serious outbreak of the bubonic plague in England. And that's probably because after this period, we're going to start seeing new and more varied treatments and understanding of disease change. So, again, a positive there. What this tells us, it shows us some of the advances in medicine and understanding during the Renaissance period, but it also highlights that actually, although science had developed and people had a better understanding of disease, actually, they were still really no better at curing the disease or understanding the disease as they had been 300 years earlier during the Black Death. There were changes in ideas, but really in practice, not a lot was that different. But we'll go through that. Again, just like the Black Death, the disease was actually spread by the bacteria in the fleas that were carried on the rats, although the fleas could also get onto fabric and wool that would then be transported across the country. So, how did attitudes towards the cause of the Great Plague change? Well, yes, the four humours as a theory have gone. So people, well, at least at the medical level, at the higher level, people didn't necessarily think that it was being spread by, or it was caused by an imbalance of the humours and the need to remove black bile, black pus, from the body. However, while the four humours weren't necessarily the go-to to explain it, no one had any better argument. Now, the dominant theory that will come through here is miasma. So it's a similarity in a sense, because miasma had been a cause, or believed to be a cause, during the Black Death. However, during the Great Plague, miasma becomes the dominant theory. It is the main cause, as far as people are concerned, or the main reason for explaining the spread of disease. So miasma and those bad smells, they believed it was created by all the stinking rubbish, all the cesspools and pits that had developed in 17th century city life, as people began to live in much closer proximity, and there weren't sewage works and things like that at this time. So the bad smell was believed to cause it. And what they particularly believed, which again is, it's correlation, but they took it as causation. They believe that there was, the bad smell existed, and it was kind of a vapour that in the cold weather kind of was stuck in the soil, maybe frozen in the soil. So during the winter months, you wouldn't suffer so much from the plague. But during hot weather in summer, it would kind of evaporate the vapour into the atmosphere, and that would spread the disease. And that linked with what people saw, that the plague, the bubonic plague, particularly spread during the warm summer months. They were generally outbreaking when the weather turned warmer, and they eased off when it went colder. So we know the weather wasn't the reason for the spread, but there was a correlation. So people believe miasma and bad smells generally were the way it was spread at this time. However, they also looked at astrology, so they fell back on the medieval ideas about that. Mostly there'd been an alignment between Saturn and Jupiter in October 1664, and then Mars and Saturn on the 12th of November. So they were both seen as unlucky combinations. I don't know why, but apparently they are. Need to talk to someone who knows about astrology for that. And so again, they suggested trouble ahead. There was a comet spotted, which is always a bad sign in astrology. So there seem to be omens of doom and ill fortune. And then you got the Great Plague. So people turn to astrology to explain why it broke out. And yes, although religion had become less dominant as a force, it was a very religious Christian society. So a lot of people believe that the Black Death itself was actually a punishment from God because of man's increasing wickedness, and it was sent kind of like Noah and the flood to clean up his kingdom by getting rid of all the bad people, which again is very similar to medieval practices. One thing that becomes slightly different is that people start to believe that the disease could be spread through human contact from person to person, and that is correct. Obviously, it can be spread through physical contact. However, because they couldn't prove this, even with ideas about little animals in the air as a spread of disease, because they couldn't prove it, it didn't really catch on with the general public. So it was there, but it wasn't the popular idea. It wasn't the dominant idea. Miasma remains that. But again, we're seeing a step forward here that they recognise human-to-human contact can spread it. Then again, once someone had caught it through miasma in the air, they recognised that it could then be spread through physical contact, sort of like a weird evolutionary thing, and that will help with quarantine. So kind of got a right idea, but they don't accept it as the dominant or the main reason that someone would get it in the first place. Now, because these ideas about the cause are largely similar, then the treatments will largely remain similar. Obviously, with miasma being the dominant theory, that will mean a rise in sort of methods of treating the disease through good smells to counteract bad smells. Okay, now again, most of the treatments occurred in the home, so very similar to as it had been in the medieval period. And there was a big focus on quarantine. As a result of that, we don't actually know what was going on in the home because it was all private and quarantined, and usually everyone died. We're not really sure. Okay, what the evidence we have is based on a relatively low sample, but we do know that some of the new ideas about treatment will influence things. So one of the big changes is instead of necessarily the four humours and trying to restore balance to the body, during the Great Plague, people will use their kind of new 17th century ideas. And so they understood that it was maybe something external that had entered the body and was attacking it. So this new idea about the cause that's become common, that is understood to be a factor. As a result of which, you wanted to get the thing out of the body. So one of the most common methods of treatment during the Renaissance period was wrapping people up, getting them nice and warm so they could sweat out the disease. So that was one cure for the plague. Wrap them up in heavy cloths and woolen materials, put them next to a fire in the middle of summer and hope it would sweat out. And the other popular idea that had come through was the idea of transference, so that you could sort of transfer the disease, suck it out of the bubas, which is lovely. So perhaps one of the most popular ideas, although the practicality just makes the mind boggle, they believe that if you strapped a live chicken to your buba, to the big boil, that would transfer the disease to the chicken. No one comments on what happened to the chickens after this, but again, the mind boggles here. If you couldn't afford or have a live chicken to strap to your buba, or you had too many bubas and not enough chickens, then perhaps you could lance it with the feather plucked from a live chicken. All of this designed to draw out the poison or the disease, the illness, and save the patient. It did not work. I thought I'd just clarify this. It did not work, and you got a lot of very angry chickens. Herbal remedies will remain popular. People will take these medicines with an idea of, you know, getting rid of the illness, however it might be, removing it from the body. They would also develop the use of poultices or rubs or kind of like bandages of nice smelling things that you'd put on the bubas for transference purposes. Again, this is not very dissimilar from the medieval era. Maybe a difference in technique, but the principle remains very much the same. And because it goes back to the fact, because they didn't understand what actually caused the disease, they really didn't know how to treat it. So they kind of stuck to the old methods. Worth bearing in mind, this is when we get the development of sort of charlatans and scammers. Because of the Great Plague, and everyone being so terrified and scared, you get some people who were nicknamed quack doctors, kind of like a bird. I'm going to come to why birds are important here. Quack doctors who would basically make stuff up and kind of pretend that they had the ultimate cure, which would be a mix of herbs and stuff. But they kind of sell it, advertise it as a cure, make a load of money, and then move on to the next place. So basically scam artists. But that's where the term quack comes from, for kind of a fake doctor. So the cures really didn't work and the treatment didn't work. And as a result of that, much like during the Black Death, during the Great Plague, the main way of saving people was to focus on prevention. Okay, so prevention remains the dominant mode of saving lives here. So that's a similarity. And the College of Physicians, in particular, new institution, College of Physicians giving medical advice, that's a slight change. They look at preventative measures. So much like in the medieval era, prayer and repentance, making sure your soul was clean and handy. That was a very common piece of medical advice. So very similar to the Middle Ages. Quarantine, which had been introduced during the Black Death, that will become a very common thing during this period. And I think during the Black during the Great Plague, see, I get confused with it, but during the Great Plague, there's much more of a focus from the authorities and from the government in implementing quarantines. And so quarantines are much better enforced than they had been during the Black Death. In fact, there's a particularly interesting little example, very famous example, of Eme in Derbyshire. And the village of Eme became infected via some cloth that had been transported from London, had the fleas in it, and that spread. And so the village was ordered into quarantine, and not just it was enforced, but also the people inside the village recognised it, and so people wouldn't leave the village. Food would be brought by people from nearby villages and kind of left at the boundary of the village, kind of like the outer limits. The population of Eme would go and they pick it up kind of later when there was no one around. They would pay for it, so they'd leave it in little bowls or baths or like troughs, like horses drink from, of vinegar, because it's acidic, and they thought, not too far out there, that it would actually cleanse the money and so on. So they'd leave coins, not paper money at this time, but they leave coins and the valuable things to pay for the food and remain completely isolated. And in the 14 months that Eme was quarantined like this, 273 people died from a population of 350, which is obviously devastating for the village of Eme. However, it worked. The quarantine did work, because while Eme got it, none of the surrounding villages got it, and it did not spread across Derbyshire. That was pretty successful. This is a nice little example of it working and being much more effective than it had been in the Middle Ages. Now, on top of quarantine, which is kind of the main way, carrying a pomander, kind of a nice smelling ball of stuff, that becomes even more common. That had existed in the Middle Ages, but because miasma is now seen as the dominant model for cause, it becomes, if not the dominant, the main way of kind of preventing and warding off the illness. So people carry this around under their noses. Diets would also be suggested, although there was no hit and miss, there was no coherent thing here. So some doctors would advise fasting as a way to prevent getting it, keep yourself fit and healthy. Others said eat a lot of garlic and sage fried in butter, which sounds lovely. Again, food as a kind of cure or having a particular diet, not that dissimilar from sort of some of Galen's views, but it didn't work. And what we do get now is we get plague doctors. So this is the time where you start getting, hopefully you'll have seen a picture of this, or you can see a picture, but the plague doctors, we kind of have these weird sort of masks with like a big beak on them, and they'd be wrapped up in these sort of wax-treated leather coats and shawls that would cover them head to toe. And that was so that these plague doctors could go round and maybe treat the patients without catching it themselves. Now, why the beak? Now, one of the common ideas people have is they see the beak and think, that was really just a convenient method of popping a load of nice-smelling things in the nose end, and that would protect you. And that was part of it, okay? So the beak would contain lovely-smelling herbs and things to ward off miasma. But it also was, it goes back to the transference theory, and there was a belief that birds would attract disease, okay? So some people kind of felt that birds were the carriers of disease and that disease was just naturally attracted to birds and then they would fly and stuff like that. So the thought was that the disease was kind of a living creature that could recognize things in your body, and it would see a bird or a bird-like thing and then would be attracted. It would leave the patient and go to the bird. Okay, so this was kind of a deliberate trick by plague doctors. They would dress up like a bird in the hope that when the disease within a patient they were treating saw a bird-like shape, they would go, "Oh, I'm going to leave this non-bird-like human being and I'm going to transfer myself to this bird thing." and they'd go to the doctor. But because the physician's cloak was treated with wax to make sure the doctor would be safe, the disease would be caught out. It would be sort of stuck on the coat and the doctor would be safe and it would have left the patient. This is obviously rubbish. It does not work. Birds are not attractors of disease in that sense. But it does also explain why they liked sticking chickens on pulses to transfer things out. So that's why birds are a thing and why the doctors had these bizarre shapes. Okay, so again, shows a limitation in an understanding of the spread of disease. But that's why the doctors had them. Obviously, it did actually work because, in a sense, because they were treated with wax and they were fully covered, fleas could not land on them and bite them, so they were protected from the original cause. And also, the pus and the infectious material, even kind of the any disease germs floating around in the atmosphere, very hard to get through this layer of protection for the doctors. So in a sense, it worked, but not for the reasons that people thought at the time. Okay, so that was the advice that came from physicians about prevention. In terms of healers, apothecaries and so on, even alchemists, they still rely on native herbs and the idea that if you take some herbs, it will ward off the disease. So particularly some native herbs that have been around for centuries. You could take a treatment for the plague, which is called plague water, which sounds delightful, but basically an infusion that you would drink and it would stop you from getting ill by giving you the strength or something like that. Very similar to the belief from the Middle Ages. Particularly the idea that you should have English-based herbs. So things like mint and rosemary could be really popular. So that's a very traditional infusion. Where we might see a slight change is thanks to the voyages of exploration and so on. Others will try new ingredients and think that might cure it. So nutmeg and sugar as part of the... it's kind of like a tonic for plague water, kind of healthy kind of thing. That could be used to ward it off. And even tobacco. People would believe that you smoke tobacco, which obviously has quite a distinctive smell, probably more pleasant than rotting animals. So if you smoke tobacco, that would ward off rotting animals. That's what I meant. Smoking tobacco would see off the horrible disease ridden miasma. Lovely. So people were actually encouraged to smoke to ward off, which is a new thing in prevention because there hadn't been tobacco during the Middle Ages. One thing which is going to sound ridiculous, but we're thinking about for a second, because the great pox of syphilis resulted in buboes and swelling boils filled with pus, and because the plague, the great plague, sees a growth in bubas and pus filled boils and things like that, people did believe they were similar and that you couldn't have both at the same time. So there was a popular theory amongst healers that if you had syphilis, you would not get the plague. Now, this is kind of a lesser of two evils, I suppose, because it takes longer to die from from syphilis. But people were encouraged, and some people did go out to actively contract syphilis in order to prevent them from getting the great plague. Now, that didn't work. Of course it didn't, because that's ridiculous in many ways. They're completely different illnesses. So all that happens is you get both syphilis and the Black Death, or the Great Plague, and it's just a question of which one will kill you first. However, while it's easy to dismiss it and laugh at it, it's not that dissimilar from vaccination. The idea that if your body has already experienced an illness, or there's a particular type of illness, it will help you or stop you getting a similar illness later down the line. And this is, well, as I shall do no doubt in a future episode, where vaccination comes from, where people realize that people who had cowpox, dairy maids working with cows, which is a very mild form of pox, would not get chickenpox. And that's where the idea of vaccination inoculation will start to come from. So it is ridiculous in the sense of this illness, but the principle will actually come to fruition, and an idea of immunity and vaccination will come through. But at this time, it's just, well, it's a new thing because didn't have syphilis in the Middle Ages, but it doesn't work. So perhaps the most important thing during this time period is the response of the government actions. So, yeah, local governments will try and prevent plague spreading, but there's going to be much more support from higher up, from central government. So Charles II is going to take a very active role in passing laws, in ensuring that quarantines and prevention is carried out. So we've got a big difference in government response here compared to the Middle Ages. So Charles II ordered that people fast regularly, and he made a list of actions to prevent the spread of the plague, which he ordered. So under direct orders, local councils and local government officials had to carry it out in all the cities where there was an outbreak. And because it was centralized, it meant everyone had to follow the same rules. So whereas in the Middle Ages, it was kind of haphazard and each local area did its own thing, not that it did much, here it's much more coordinated. Public meetings, fairs, and even large funerals are all banned. You could draw a comparison there to COVID, I think, and things that happened there. Theatres were all closed down as a means of stopping the spread. Streets and alleyways, they were cleaned, really cleaned, to get rid of the miasma. And fires were set on street corners, full of sweet smelling herbs and stuff. So in a barrel, you know, they didn't like just light the street or a house or something, but like contained fires that would create a lovely smell. Okay, kind of like a barbecue, I suppose. So they'd nice smell to get rid of all the bad smells. That didn't work, but we get this sort of government action. Cats, dogs, and pigeons were all killed as soon as they were seen in the streets, or assuming they were caught. No word on rats, but probably that involved, because if they didn't, there's going to be an increase in rats. So we do know that about 40,000 dogs and 200,000 cats were slaughtered. And because it's fleas that, yes, live on the rats, but can live on any sort of furry animal, that might well have helped. Although we don't really have any evidence to support that. Yeah, that's pretty bad for the dogs and cats, I have to say. Anyway, the Mayor of London also would appoint searchers and wardens. They're not just London. London's the big case study. Most towns and cities with a mayor. They would appoint people to go and search and then monitor the spread of disease and report back. And so they would go from house to house to inspect and see if anyone had plague. And if there was, they would either order the residents, everyone in the house, to be sent off to a pest house, new type of hospital, or that they would be quarantined within the house for 40 days. Again, that's not dissimilar from the COVID measures. There you go. There's similarities. And just to make sure, they put a great big red cross on the front door, and they'd also, just for good measure, say, "Lord, have mercy on us." So it's kind of biblical in terms, but it was the idea that it was a plague house, clearly marked out, do not go there, it's under quarantine. And the quarantine would only be lifted after the 40 days, and they'd see if anyone had survived. Parish officials, local sort of church had many types, parish officials would then have to bring them food and other necessities, and they'd kind of leave them on the window ledge or something like that. So it removed them, and it would be relatively successful at the prevention areas. And yeah, some unfortunate souls would have to go through the city collecting the bodies of the dead on sort of carts and removing them off to be disposed of. Again, it does raise the question what they did otherwise. But anyway, because they're in such large numbers, that is a sort of hygiene measure in getting rid of the dead bodies so they can't fester and spread disease. So not massively dissimilar in terms of what happened with quarantine in the Middle Ages. However, the effectiveness and the government role was a significant change, and that's going to make it more effective. Nevertheless, as in 1348, most people believed the best way to avoid the plague was to disappear, to leave, to get away as far away from it as possible. And so you would get people leaving the towns and cities, which would at least limit the spread within the towns and cities, though it could then cause and spread it throughout the country. So that's could have been another way it would spread so quickly. All of this goes back to the fact that people just still didn't know what caused it in the first place. And therefore, because they didn't understand the cause, they didn't understand or know how to treat it effectively. And just like in the Middle Ages then, the focus was much more on prevention than it was on actual cure and treatment. And prevention was the best way of avoiding the Black Death. So people carry on with that as a strategy. And they put their energies and their focus into stopping the spread of disease rather than trying to cure the disease. So that's very similar to the Middle Ages. So you've got a number of differences as well as quite a lot of similarities between the Black Death and the Great Plague in the 17th century. And it basically all goes back to the limitations in understanding about the cause of disease, that while they had moved forward and they had a better understanding, they still didn't really know why disease spread, particularly something like the bubonic plague. And for that reason, they didn't know how to cure or treat it effectively. I will compare this to later case studies, but that's basically the Black Death. So there you go. The causes of it were mostly thought to be supernatural, God or the planet, or by miasma. People recognized that the plague was spread from person to person, and the focus was mostly on prevention, with the idea that once you got it, well, that was probably it for you, despite whatever treatments. And we do get the government taking a much more active role here, particularly in London, than in previous outbreaks. So a much more coordinated set of stuff. Actions, that's the word I was looking for. So that, very brief, very quick whiz through the Black Death as a case study, and how to make comparisons with the Middle Ages and the Black Death. Sorry, that's a comparison of the Great Plague of 1665, which you can now compare to the Black Death of the 14th century. How are you enjoying this medical stuff? There's going to be a few more medical things, and hopefully I'll be able to do some others. I'm kind of working through case studies. If you do the GCSE, you kind of know where I'm coming from. If you don't, just enjoy the case studies or ignore them. It's fun. It's up to you. Everyone's got their own choice. So I'm going to do another case study next time, which will be on the scientist and Dr. William Harvey and what he discovered and how that will link in to ideas about cause and treatment. So something to look forward to there. Anyway, take care and stay safe. Don't get the Black Death. There you go. Or if you do, it's okay, because now you can be treated with antibiotics. But that is for a much, much later talk. Thanks very much for your time and goodbye.